This is a Mexican Crossing Lines. And welcome to A Mexican Crossing Lines with your host, Cindy Gomez-Shemp.
And Duke Gomez-Shemp.
You're listening to 88.1 FM KPPP LP Fargo-Moorhead, where we're adding local color to your airwaves. And we're also broadcasting online through Shoutcast. You can go to kpppfm.com and listen live. Today's show is about the voices of Standing Rock, the testimony of the people at Standing Rock, and specifically those who witnessed the October 27th clearing of the Ground Zero camp.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a lot of interviews from people that were there that weekend, people that arrived as a result of watching what Morton County Sheriff and their police allies did during that raid.
Yes, exactly.
And we will be sharing those all throughout this week
mm-hmm.
and next week. So keep an eye out for those. But today we're going to share with you the testimony of Dallas Goldtooth of the Indigenous Environmental Network, Dan Nanamkin, mm-hmm. a Nez Perce leader who was in full regalia and praying yeah. with the water at the front. You may have seen him in a lot of the news stories that were going around the country.
Mm-hmm.
He was arrested for praying at the front line.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
He will share his experience of his arrest. And finally, we will have an interview with the youth who wished to remain anonymous. And as many people have been targeted by the police,
that's right.
It's very understandable why he would want to remain anonymous
mm-hmm.
as he shared his story of what he experienced at the at that October 27th raid. So I hope that you will keep it right here on the dial. I do want to hear from folks out there who have been to Standing Rock, who were arrested at Standing Rock,
mm-hmm.
who have a story to tell about Standing Rock. And we want to hear from you folks. We want to hear about your experiences. What do you think of the shows we've done so far? Do you have any comments, questions, corrections? We want to know.
Exactly. And radio is easy because it's all audio. You don't have to look good. You can call in, and talk to us. Our call-in number is 701-566-0917. Call and leave a message. Tell us who you are. You can leave a message that we can air. Tweet us at @media_PPP. Email Cindy at kpppfm.com. Or me, Duke, at kpppfm.com. You can follow us on Facebook at 88.1 FM Fargo-Moorhead, the People's Press Project, and Mexi-Can.
That's right. And we do encourage you to do that so that you can follow along with our latest news pieces. We post a lot of things on there so people can tell us what they think.
Mm-hmm.
Is this something worthy of our time, your time? But first, let's start off by giving you some updates about what's going on at camp. Now, there's been a lot of talk about checking in on Facebook.
Yep.
People have been doing that a lot. And people have been arguing about whether or not that's something we need to do or should do or does it matter. One thing that Unicorn Riot did say about this is, regardless of whether or not you check in or don't check in or you believe that the police are using the check-ins to make a list of people
yeah.
to surveil.
ID people,
Right. It is known, it is confirmed by the Dickinson Press that Morton County Sheriff Kyle Kirchmeier and his staff have been compiling dossiers on people arrested at the pipeline protests, including journalists and medics and legal observers and lawyers, by the way. And the Morton County Sheriff's Department appears to be politically profiling different individuals based on their alleged past attendance at protest events. Here's a quote from the Dickinson Press article on Morton County Sheriff's compiling of dossiers. The detailed reports highlight anti-police propaganda and speech that some of those arrested have previously posted to Facebook and Instagram. One woman was convicted in Minnesota of obstructing the legal process by interfering with a peace officer, a gross misdemeanor, and had a felony charge of assault on a peace officer dismissed. Another woman is described as having a history of protesting pipelines, including the Keystone XL pipeline, and of supporting radical, quote-unquote, radical left-wing environmental groups and causes. The reports also note past participation in protests such as Occupy Wall Street and Black Lives Matter. So the fact that you are a conscientious person that likes to express your First Amendment rights of speech and assembly, you will be targeted by the Morton County Sheriff's Department because that is what they are basing their claims that these people are professional protesters and eco-terrorists on.
Yeah.
And they're using social media. So regardless of whether or not you think it's a good idea to check in with social media or not, be aware that Morton County Sheriff's Department does watch Facebook. In fact, the lawyers that we interviewed from the Civil Liberties Defense Center said they call the lawyers call it Fedbook.
Yeah.
Because that's what they really use it for.
Yeah, the Morton County Sheriff's Department put out a blip on Facebook the other day saying it's not true that we're actually tracking people that check in. And I read it as that they're admitting they are just because they said that.
You know? Yeah. Yes, true. Anyway, the standoff continues despite the fact that the Dakota Access Pipeline construction is going on, and it continues to go on. One of our listeners and our greatest fan, Harlan Sylvester, sent me a letter today in which he mentioned the fact that, you know, the Obama administration, the Department of Justice and the Interior, as well as the Army Corps of Engineers, had asked for the Dakota Access Pipeline and Energy Transfer partners to voluntarily stop building in the 20-mile radius around Lake Oahe until they could make a legal determination in the federal court system about the treaty rights, about the sovereignty rights of the Standing Rock Sioux tribe, of you know, their consultation, the lack of consultation, I should say, with the tribe. But that has not occurred.
No.
They have continued. The day that October 27th raid occurred, they were still constructing in the background.
Yes,
while
yes,
the police were sitting there macing and arresting people and violating people's constitutional rights. In the background, Dapple was hard at work.
Exactly.
So they were there for, you know, the protection of the pipeline workers so that they could continue to build their pipe. Laws be damned. They're not concerned with the resolution of laws, as Chief Kirchmeier or Sheriff Laney tell you. Neither one of them are concerned with that.
Exactly.
Cal Kirchmeier is not concerned with whether or not the law is followed, because if he was, he would be just as concerned that the treaty rights and the sovereignty rights and the constitutional, the constitutionally protected rights of protesters to assemble, to redress grievances against this pipeline, to do direct action, nonviolent direct action. These things have been happening all over the country. Lots of people are doing these nonviolent direct actions. So we also know Amnesty International are there observing. So is the UN. But that does not mean that those bodies are going to save the people at Standing Rock. People have talked about this a lot, and they say, you know what? That doesn't necessarily mean that that these folks are here to save us. They're here to document what is being done. They're here to collect evidence. They've done that in many other situations. But that doesn't mean that they're stopping anything.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, there were reports over the weekend that oil was thrown, a decent amount of oil was poured on the sidewalk, limestone walls, and windows of the state capitol in Bismarck. It is not known who did that, but I have my suspicions about anything reported like this because there's been infiltrators, not just at the Standing Rock protest, there's been infiltrators at Black Lives Matter protests, etc., where police have actually been caught masquerading as protesters so that they could give the people in riot gear an excuse to arrest en masse and get people out of there.
Yeah, this is an old thing. I mean, it's happened in every major protest that there's infiltrators. In fact, in Minneapolis at the National Republican Convention, there was a whole scene of arrests. It was actually started by one of the informants who actually created it and then got arrested with all the other people and they let him go. The stuff is happening right here in our community.
And also, on Monday evening, a group of water protectors swam across the river to confront DAPL security, who were on the other side of the river with floodlights, razor wire, and pepper spray. And no arrests took place as a result of that swim. But then there was another incident early Tuesday afternoon. A group of water protectors paddled across with canoes through the floodplains on U.S. Army Corps of Engineer land to attempt to observe the DAPL construction. They posted a video to Twitter by journalist Alex Rubenstein, which shows armed men, possibly North Dakota law enforcement or National Guard, who knows, threatening people with arrest on Army Corps land, which is believed to be outside of their jurisdiction. The man threatening the water protectors with arrest claims that he has a document that indicating that they have permission from the Army Corps of Engineers to conduct arrests on the Army Corps' property.
Wow.
Which doesn't sound legal to me. It doesn't sound right to me. Document was not shown to anyone. Sounds like the Myron Dewey deputy guy that had a warrant that he never showed.
Exactly.
And the Unicorn Riot report states that they're trying to contact the Army Corps of Engineer. So those are some of the updates that we have for you. You can go check out the rest of the article. We'll have the link for that Unicorn Riot update along with this program. And now I want you to hear from the three interviews that we mentioned: Dallas Goldtooth of the Indigenous Environmental Network, Dan Nanamkin, and our anonymous interview.
Hello, this is Cindy Gomez-Shump with KPPPLP 88.1 FM, and I am on Media Hill with Dallas Goldtooth. He is not in jail. He's doing fine. He looks okay. He looks a little bit tired, but other than that, he is well. Thank you for talking to me. Tell me, how are you doing?
Hi, I'm happy. Thank you for the interview, the long-awaited interview. I'm doing good. I think I am tired. I'm sleepy. I didn't get a lot of sleep last night, but overall, I'm feeling very contemplative at the moment. I mean, there's a lot of going on. There's a lot happening politically, action-wise, camp-wise. And so it's just kind of very thoughtful lately.
I wanted to ask you specifically about some of the weapons that were used against the protectors. We just read some of the updates that you gave us, trying to dispel some of the misinformation that's gone on in the media and then Facebook and social media, people talking about people possibly being killed and all of this. And you corrected some of that information. We shared that on our program.
Oh, great.
So I wanted to ask you, like, what kinds of weapons were used? Because we heard such a variety of different things, and I wanted our listeners to understand what was used against peaceful people.
Yeah, there was two armored personnel carriers that had one had a sound cannon or LRAD, which emitted a very high pitched noise or series of noises that were extremely painful to the ears. And then they also had this other one that's called, I forgot the name of it, but it basically emitted a series of microwaves that would heat the body up, so you'd feel extreme discomfort. My friend Candy Mossett, my coworker, actually was one of the amongst the group when they turned that on. They had I can't get that figured out. They had they had some non-lethal weapons that they were using, the bean bags, there was rubber bullets, there was concussion grenades that were shot into the crowd, pepper spray.
Explain the concussion grenade. What does that do?
It's a flashbang. Basically, it was a rubber ball with a charge in it. So when it got shot into the crowd, it would explode into the crowd, and it would basically give off an extremely loud bang flash, and it would clear a wide range of space. But when it would explode, the rubber would be shrapnel from the rubber would be shot out in all directions. So people would not only get impacted by this loud noise, but also be hit by rubber shrapnel. So it was like an explosion sound. That's what it was. Basically, the explosion without the sound or without the flames and the fire and that, just with the sound and with the shrapnel from the rubber.
So I heard that medics were reporting that people had internal bleeding. What kind of weapons caused that? Do you know?
I'm not aware of what specific weapons would cause what type of injuries. I'm not a medic, but I think that what I saw was people that were hit with rubber bullets or hit with the bean bags, or basically these are projectiles being shot at extremely high velocities towards soft flesh. And so I saw a number of like extreme bruises. Some people had reported broken ribs. You know, there was a number of people who had where the projectiles did break the skin or was bleeding. So I mean, you throw something like a beanbag or a rubber bullet fast enough, it has a strong potential for death as well. It can kill. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what the other things?
You all right?
Yeah, that's my daughter Elizabeth. She's just hanging out, waiting for me. So I wanted to ask you, like, what is the mood here now? What's happened since the day that we saw all that action? Because things haven't slowed down here, have they?
No, I think that it was a clear demonstration of the lengths to which North Dakota is willing to go to defend a multi-billion-dollar oil company over the rights of common people. And I think that has definitely opened up a lot of eyes on a national scale, and has definitely reinvigorated this movement for people to come and support. Here on the ground, I think it's just a matter of reassessing how do we respond to such overt militarized oppression. You know, how do we stay committed to peaceful civil disobedience and nonviolent direct action when the state is doing everything in its power to quell such resistance and to continue to put our people in harm. I think that's the big deal here, and I think that a lot of folks are here for the long run and stay committed. So it's a matter of trying to figure out what's a different way we can go about continuing to stop construction in line with our principles of nonviolence.
Do you know? Have any idea of how many people have been arrested? The numbers have been varying widely.
I don't know the specific number, but I know it's at least over 300 people in total.
Wow.
Oh, from that action?
Yeah, just from the action.
Oh, yeah. There's, I think, over 106 last I heard. Yeah.
And so we've heard a lot of different reports about people being put in dog kennels, about people being transferred to a wide variety of counties. Can you talk a little bit about what kinds of issues people are facing?
I had two friends who were bailed out yesterday, and they were sent to the county jail in Bismarck. And when they arrived on the scene, they were put into dog kennels that were stationed inside the parking garage. It was just a bare floor. They were, the intake process is that everyone had the police literally came and wrote numbers on their arms as if they were concentration camp, like people being sent to camps. Like their registration numbers were written on and onto their arms. They were put into dog kennels for a good amount of time, and it's just absurd. I mean, it's like it is not only. I think you can't ignore the racial undertones of how the North Dakota law enforcement is reacting and responding to our water protectors. I mean, there is some deeply rooted oppression that's occurring here. You have some deeply rooted forms of colonization that is ongoing, that Native communities, it's not what we're experiencing here is no different in our eyes than what a lot of our grandparents faced, you know, and numerous a number of our ancestors went through in dealing with systemic state oppression, you know. So the reports that we've been hearing from the jail is just horrifying, and it's disgusting, you know, that our people and a lot of them were women, a lot of men that were put into humiliating situations by the hands of North Dakota law enforcement.
Mm-hmm. Now, I just heard a report from the Young Turks that they've confirmed that they're using the emergency response system that's in place between states for national disasters like floods and hurricanes and such. That's what they used to bring in this coalition from different states to come and respond to this. How do you feel about those kinds of services that are meant to be used for national disasters being used against peaceful water protectors?
I guess I wasn't aware of it, but it's you've had over 100 some people that have been arrested in Iowa, and you down in Iowa it's mostly white folks that are being arrested, and you have not seen the level of militarization as what you've seen here. You've had white men armed with assault rifles pointed at federal officers in Oregon, the Bundy case where they've occupied land, federal lands, literally pointing rifles at armed police officers, 24-hour media coverage, and yet you have water protectors in the thousands here facing off against a militarized police force, and you're not getting the same response from the media. You know, we are literally unarmed and we fear for our lives. And to see that the coordination that's happening between police, between police forces is just, it's not surprising. I mean, it is not surprising whatsoever. So I really freaking hope that if you are a person that's surprised at the state oppression that's happening here in North Dakota, if you're surprised by the militarization of our law enforcement, if you're surprised at people being registered numbers like they're in a concentration camp and they're forced into dog kennels, then you should better speak up. You better rise up and start talking to your law enforcement, to your elected officials, and speaking up and sending messages to President Obama to act, to revoke this permit, and to order a full environmental impact statement. That, like, it's time to stop this. We're facing off with National Guard here. The last time National Guard has been called into North Dakota was for tornadoes. It's absurd, and it's time. This has to stop.
Thank you very much.
All right, thanks.
Hello, this is Cindy Gomez-Shemp with 88.1 KPPP LP Fargo Moorhead. I'm here at the Sacred Stone Camp. What is your name, sir? Tell me who you are and where you're from, if you would like to introduce yourself, please.
It's Kaup Lesim Clark and Sukuna Kin. Uskoyel put Sukuna Kin with Walawama, Dan and Amkin, the Spelum Washington, Cobble Tribes, Okanagan Lakes, Nispers.
And how long have you been here at camp?
This is my second journey out this way. Been a couple weeks, both journeys.
Have you seen any of the frontline action yourself?
Oh yeah, they arrested me Thursday.
I saw you in the pictures and the video, and I wanted to get your first-hand experience of what you went through.
Well, it was really a terrible day. You know, we showed up there and we were in prayer, you know, for the general public. You know, they may not understand our way of prayer, but you know, we went up there to sing and we light, you know, different smudge to pray and bless ourselves, the ground, you know, those around us. You know, we have people of all different races, colors, ages, you know, from around the world that are standing in solidarity with us, and basically my part in it was just to encourage people with prayer and with songs, you know, and that's all I did was doing. And we had elders that were there who led, you know, our sacred pipe ceremonies, or what are very sacred ceremonies. And I'm a singer, so I have a drum, and I help sing these sacred songs. And my part in this was to pray in that way with our elders. And at one point, I seen some friends that were up there, a little north of where I was standing, and I went and heard them sing a beautiful, beautiful prayer song. And at that point, a man asked me if I'd pray with this water. So I stood by my friends, and I was uplifted that water towards the sun in the highest way I could even pray with the heart. It's hard to even explain how much soul and spirit that you put into this prayer, you know, asking for peace, asking for help, asking for a creator, you know, to watch over us, protect us, and give us some sort of help for the water, you know, because this is what it's all about, is the water. And so I see my sister, you know, a lady here that I respect, said, "Sister, you come up and pray." So she prayed, and same thing, you know, the man and the woman, you know, they all both have different strengths, you know, and so to have that sort of unity, you know, we prayed together. Then a youth joined us, and they prayed over the water. Then the elderly man, a Caucasian man, he came and offered prayer. So we were there praying. And at that time, the military force came in, and they were just kept pushing in, pushing everybody in closer and closer, you know, entrapping us. And next thing I know, that they were hitting me in the back with their batons and pushing us forward, telling us to get out of the way. And it was pretty, I still feel the pain in my back, you know, from them doing that. And anyhow, I didn't want to get in trouble, you know, didn't want them to have any excuse to hurt me further. So I the staff that I was carrying, which is an eagle staff, which is a long stick with feathers, a prayer stick, I give it to somebody. And instrument that I had, which was a rattle, you know, that I sing with, I give that to somebody. So, you know, they couldn't use that as an excuse, you know, that I had a weapon of any sort. So I had open hands. And I turned around to address them, and I told them that, you know, I was praying, and that I didn't want to be pushed. I wanted to pray, finish his prayer. Even though they were telling us to move, we were complying with, you know, what they did. We were moving. And but when I told them, you know, I wanted to finish, that's when they arrested me and took me under custody.
Now, explain to our listeners, when you carry that staff, when you carry the water, when you carry the pipes, these are sacred objects. The drum, the rattle, these are not weapons. These are sacred objects. Could you explain to our listeners what these sacred objects represent and why you carry them in prayer?
Well, all of these things are held with much value. It's prayer, and you know, these feathers. Eagle feathers, you know, that we use, you know, we hold them in high regards, because the eagle to us has a high spiritual significance, you know, with our prayers, and that connection between us and the Creator. Them drums we use to uplift our prayers, you know, the drum is the heartbeat of Mother Earth, and every gathering, you know, every ceremony that we have, there's a drum involved, and that's just how we sing our songs. Come with drums, different rattles, you know, different instruments like that we sing with, and those are just prayer songs, you know. Some of them have been passed down through hundreds and hundreds of years, you know, through maybe beginning of time. Some of these, you know, songs are that old, very old prayer songs. Some of those songs come from our ancestors, our family who's gone on before us, who've received these songs whether in a dream or when they go through their hablechia, which is a fast of 4 days of no food, no water, you know, a sacrifice of your own personal body, you know, to receive vision. These things are sometimes received. Sometimes these songs were passed down through a relatives way long ago who died, and when they died, they went to the other side, to the to heaven, as you'd say, you know, and they talked with their ancestors up there, and our ancestors gave them instruction, and they give them these songs, so they came back to us, and they told us these messages, and they showed us the songs. So it's up, and these songs have different meanings and purposes and reasons, you know, that are very significant and special in that way. So these songs that include, you know, the different instruments, the feathers, the smudge, all these are all spiritual significance for protection and spiritual strength.
So it would be the equivalent for a Christian of like being in prayer in church.
Yes, exactly. Just like say if you had your Easter Mass, you know, or something with a lot of significance of you know, the people there in the city, you know, that they're accustomed to, you know, where, or even the other thing is up there where Dapple has made their road, you know, that they went over some burial sites, you know, where our ancestors, the folks from here, their ancestors are buried. So these are prayer songs asking for forgiveness, asking for healing, because there's a lot of people with broken hearts, you know, that they know that their ancestors been desecrated so inhumanely. And so this is also just like if you went through a funeral, you know, procession, that you're praying and somebody comes in and starts to hit you and tear gas you, you know, and beat you and shoot you, you know, just for praying over your ancestors. And that's why a lot of people really hurt spiritually, and now we can't even go up there to that area, and people are still desecrating that area more than ever now, you know, and who knows what other areas that are probably being desecrated, you know, being taken with no care or disregard for anything with our spiritual significance or cultural, you know, relevance to any of our sacred items. Like, personally, my vehicle was left up there, you know, alongside the road, because I got arrested. My vehicle was there on the easement of the road, so it should have been not taken. But they, from the reports that I get, some of the Dapple workers were permitted, you know, when after the police took over the campsite, Dapple workers were permitted to go through our vehicles.
Without a warrant?
Yeah, they went through our vehicles, reportedly, and there's even reports to people say, hey, be careful, because they may plant things in your vehicle. And I have a lot of my sacred items, my prayer items that are in there, as well as work items of mine, you know, that I'm pretty fearful of, you know. I don't know how my vehicle is right now, how any of my possessions, I won't know until Monday.
So tell me, when you were arrested, where were you taken? What was done to you? If you could relive it a little for me, were you strip searched? How were you treated? How long were you held?
Well, when I was arrested, they took me behind their line. And I'd never been read my Miranda rights, and they first told me about two charges, which was a riot, you know, something about, you know, inciting a riot, and another one was being I can't recall right offhand. It's kind of a funny word, but anyhow, a nuisance. So they brought me up to their van, they had their zip ties, tied us up, processed us, put us in a van, and from that van we've seen a lot of this crazy, how they were treating our people at that moment. That was really hurtful for us to have to watch that. But
what did you see?
You see these horses, there's men on horseback, and I think they were trying to scourge these guys on horseback, so they threw these flashbang grenades, which would have been around head level to them riders. Boom! And I was really surprised that guy didn't fall off his horse, and all of a sudden the second one, boom, you know, just really loud, you know, and then all of a sudden the tear gas canisters, they're throwing them in the crowd, and all of a sudden we start hearing the bullets, you know, they were shooting rubber bullets and sandbag bullets into the crowd, and shortly after that LRAV, you know, that military vehicle, you could hear this really loud noise that's like, you know, they turned that on full blast onto the crowd, you know, and that's really horrible that they did that to them people. And then I start seeing gangs of cops that were arresting people. They were throwing them down really hard, you know, and arresting them, you know. There'd be like four or five on a person, and they're just roughing them up, you know, and chasing people around after they tear gassed them, you know, and people trying to escape. And I've seen people, you know, starting to fearfully, you know, kind of run from, you know, the cops as they kept pushing forward. And that's some of the things that we seen when we were out of there.
And then how many people were you arrested with?
They had us in that van, and I think there was about eight of us in there. You know, they didn't even buckle us up, or you know, so we weren't buckled up. They brought us into Morton County, or, you know, our Mandan, and at Mandan we were processed there. They I'll be down there. We were brought down into a dog cages. So we were all put in these cages down there. Then they were unloading other vans of us, and there they took our shoes and, you know, some of our clothes and like that, photoed us. And then they threw us into one of these paddy wagons, and there was like four or five of us on each side of the paddy wagon, and they closed the door on us in there, and it was hot, super hot, and we were there about a half hour to an hour, you know, in there, and some guys were kind of freaking out a little bit, but just kept praying and talking, and we tried to keep things light so they would, you know, nobody would, you know, freak out. So we handled it all right, and by then they sent us to Burley.
So you were not left in Morton County, they sent you somewhere else?
Yeah, to Burley, and at there we were brought in, and we were waiting for a long, long time. There was I think 17 of us there. Wow. And we were put in this room, and it was pretty cold, concrete room, which is their rec room, but it was pretty cold, and we were waiting there for hours, and they'd take us out one by one. And anyhow, through that process point, I'm guessing we were probably there, what, 5-6 o'clock or so maybe, and I didn't actually get booked into the room until 2 a.m. around. It was that long, you know, and they did strip search us, you know, when they made us take our clothing off, and they strip search us and had us put on their uniform, and then that was it, you know. They put us in our cell.
When you were inside, did you hear any stories of anybody that was brutally treated or that needed medical assistance or any problems like that you experienced?
Well, where we were in our facility, you know, I think we were all kind of split up, you know, into different groups, so we didn't really have anybody, you know, from you know, the protectors that were put together that I'm aware of, you know. So one of my friends, he was even put in a cell with a bunch of oil workers, so that was kind of scary for him. And we were put in place with guys who were heading off to prison, you know, and things like that. So it was, you know, really didn't get a whole lot of sleep that night. But, you know, because we were, you know, relatively, you know, I would say we're all peaceful folks, you know. Nobody was there to be some big bad person or anything, you know. And you know, so we just, you know, by the grace of God, you know, everything turned out for us, you know, that you know, we all made it out okay. We got out yesterday evening around 5-6 o'clock, you know. We had to go to court for the day, and we learned, you know, oh yeah, it was the other thing, when they booked us that night, they, you know, I asked, and still no Miranda rights were read to me, and because they wouldn't allow us a phone call until after they booked us. So when I got done getting booked, I asked them, okay, well, you know, I'm going to call my attorney, just let him know we're here, I'm here. What are my charges? And at that time, I learned that I had a felony, as well as all the other folks that were in there. They added a felony, which was endangerment by fire, something like that. And that was a felony. And it's like, that was like really crazy that that's even a charge pinned on all of us.
Endangerment by fire?
Yeah. Well, when the military force went through the main camp, you know, I guess, you know, the blockade, road blockade, then somebody lit a fire up there. And so, you know, I don't know who or what was burnt, but, you know, we did see fire going on up there. And so apparently they're going to try to blame all of us. And I'm guessing everybody else who, because they're sending people to all sort of different jails, far as away as Fargo and whatnot, and far as I'm aware, everybody got charged that felony charge.
So has this changed your resolve, what you experienced? Has it changed your resolve to stand here, to resist with the people at Standing Rock, and to continue to protect the water?
Well, today, you know, we had a lot of spiritual people, you know, what they're trying to do is bring more unity to the people here, more prayer, remind them that this is all about prayer, you know, because there are some that have been hurt so bad, you know, that they want to react, you know, and negatively, saying negative things and acting out. And we got to be mindful, you know, and remind them that, you know, this ain't what this is about, you know. And that police force out there as well, DAPL, you know, they'll look for any excuse, any reason, you know, to further their advancement into, you know, what they want to do, what they're intending to do, you know. So any wrong move, you know, on anyone's side, even though there's thousands of people just showing up today who never been here, you know, some of these folks are just here for the first time, first day, and have one of these people just go up there and do a wrong move, well, guess what? Everybody in this whole camp, you know, will get hurt from that, you know. So that's what we're up against, you know. And some people are planted here, you know, to cause, you know, make us look bad, you know. And so we also got to be mindful of that, you know, because that has happened here in the past, you know, where people who've been planted to make bad publicity, you know, towards us, you know, they come in camp to raise Cain, you know. So this is going on, but, you know, every day we wake up before the sun even rises. We get up, we pray. We're here, our elders, you hear our elders speak and talk and pray, and the women come up here and they lead us in a water ceremony, a beautiful prayer for everyone, you know, all colors, all nationalities, all sexual preferences, you know, nobody's excluded from it, you know, everybody's allowed to pray, and you know, people pray for every meal. We take care of, you know, all the guests, all the elders, all the children, veterans, you know. So many things, you know, that are done here in a very beautiful way, you know. I mean, donations here for everyone. If they want anything, you know, you can come here and you know, you're provided for. People come here who are maybe homeless, you know, don't have any money. Well, they're fed every day, you know, three meals, and they're welcome into people's homes, their camps. You know, people take care of each other, you know, and that's what ultimately, you know, everything's about, you know, eventually being self-sustaining. And it's all about healing, too, you know. There's a lot of healing that's going on.
Thank you very much for your perspective and for your words. I really appreciate the interview.
Thank you very much. Limlet.
Hello, this is Cindy from KPPPLP 88.1 FM Radio in Fargo, Moorhead, and I am here with one of the brave water protectors who was arrested. For obvious reasons, he prefers to remain anonymous. The people here who have been putting literally their lives on the line to protect this water have, for understandable reasons, been targeted by the Morton County Sheriff's Department and their military allies. So, thank you for doing this interview with me. Could you tell me what you experienced? You said that you were arrested on the 27th?
Yes.
And what was the circumstances of your arrest? What were you doing at the time?
I was part of the prayer circle. I was one of the people on part of the prayer circle at the camp. And while we were there, the police were slowly closing in on us, and when they got past us, the police threw flashbang grenades, or they threw a flashbang grenade into the crowd, and then after that, there were some shots fired from the police into the crowd. I remember seeing a horse, I think a horse got shot by the beanbags. Rubber bullets, I'm not really sure what.
And were you in prayer at the moment that you were arrested?
Yes.
Everyone else around you was also in prayer?
Yes, we're all in prayer.
Wow. How many other people were with you at the moment that happened?
A little over 30, I think. More than 30.
And obviously the police had all sorts of weapons that were firing right around you. You saw people get hurt. What other kinds of weapons were used against you while you were in prayer?
We're in prayer, and the police surrounded us, and waited for a plan of attack. But while we were singing, we were able to de-escalate the situation. We even invite some of the police officers to come pray with us. But I guess for their jobs, they couldn't. And we calmed them down to where they were more peaceful with us. And, yeah.
So tell me, we've been hearing a lot of reports that people were arrested en masse and then they were taken to be processed, and that they were put into dog cages, dog kennels. What do you know about that?
Yes, when they arrested us, they took us to the Bismarck jail, or no, the Mandan jail. And in the parking lot, they set up basically big dog kennels, it looked like. And they threw us in there. They stripped us down to a shirt and just our pants. And then they had us stay in the dog kennels. It was cold in there, by the way, and hard concrete floors.
Did you have a bathroom in there, a bed, any place to sit?
We didn't have any place to sit but the ground. They had some porta potties in there, but other than that, that was it.
Were you given food, water, medical attention if anyone needed it?
We were given water and food eventually. It took a while for the food, but they had water.
How long were you detained, and what happened to you after that? By the way, were you strip searched? Were you made to disrobe completely?
The Mandan jail, we just stripped down to a shirt and pants. But when we were transported to another jail, we were strip searched. Had to take our clothes off and squat and cough. And is. I don't know. The treatment that they gave us here in Bismarck was, from what I've heard from other people, is it wasn't so great as our treatment at Cass County and all the way in Fargo.
It was better in Cass County, are you saying, or worse?
From what I heard, our treatment at Cass County is better than Mandan and Bismarck.
Wow. So, how long were you held in there before you got out? And what happened to you when you were there?
Our stay in Cass County wasn't so bad as the treatment as I've heard from some other people who were in Mandan and Bismarck. Well, she doesn't like to be called an elderly lady, but, you know, she's a little older than most. Is it for a little action, like piss bumping another water protector? And she was also in prayer with us, too. Is it? I guess the police officers put her hands behind her back, you know, really forcefully, and put her in solitary confinement.
For fist bumping another water protector, you say?
Yep.
Wow. And when you were finally released, did you hear about how many other people were released with you? Was there people that were waiting for you guys? How did that whole process go?
Yes, when we were released, how many was there of us? Over 30, I think. When we were released, we got out of jail, our brothers and sisters were there waiting for us to bring us back to the camp.
Wow, that must have felt pretty good. And after everything that you saw that day, I wanted to ask you, how did you feel about the militarized response of the police juxtaposition to completely unarmed people that were praying? Was that necessary, do you think? Was there a real threat for the police there? And how did that make you feel as an Indigenous person to have the police respond to you that way?
The police went, well, way overboard with the military, well, with the assault weapons, the AR-15s, the flashbang, the armored personnel vehicles, the helicopters flying low and the planes flying low. Let's see.
They had sound cannons too, didn't they?
Oh yeah, they did. They had an LRAD. I remember hearing that off in the distance. It's really loud, like a siren.
Yeah.
I heard when it went off, I was watching live feeds, when it went off, I had to take the sound off. I couldn't stand to hear it. It was just, even through the, you know, through the computer, it was so piercing. What's your mood now that you've gotten out? How are you feeling? And what do you feel is the mood of some of the other water protectors that had to go through that experience?
I'm feeling good now, but I was a little scary at first when we got arrested. When the police arrested me and pulled me out of the circle, they were pretty rough. They pulled me out and slapped me on the ground, and they tried to twist my arm a bit too, you know, farther than it should go. If they pushed any harder, I'm pretty sure they would have popped my shoulder out of place.
Wow. So, like I said, what is your mood now that you're doing, you know, back at camp, and some of the other people that were arrested along with you? Are you planning on staying here? Are you going to continue the resistance?
I'm going to stay in Standing Rock and stand with the people here until this thing is over. I'm pretty sure the other water protectors who are arrested with me will do the same. Together here, we're a family here in the camp. Stand against the police until this thing is over. Stand against the oil company that wants to drill underneath the water and possibly create one of the biggest natural catastrophes that ever happened in the United States.
Thank you for your work. Thank you for your protection of this place, of this people, and of this water for all of us.
So that was an amazingly powerful testimony. I do have to wrap up the show soon, but I wanted to tell some people, I wanted to tell our listeners about some of the rumors that have been going around, one of which is that $2.5 million were anonymously donated for the release of all the people that were arrested, and all of the cars were taken out of impound. And although donations have been made, and some people have had their bails paid or their impound fees paid for, no such $2.5 million donation was made, according to the Red Owl Collective, legal collective, who appeared at the bond hearing for those arrested. They absolutely denied that any such contribution was received or used for bail money or vehicle forfeiture money or in any manner for the defense of those being arrested. They said that the question of the validity of the statements from the White Wolf Pack, which reported the rumor, and or any other media source that repeats it, because they said they are concerned that these false assertions will deter people from contributing to the organizations that have been involved in posting bail for and defending the water protectors.
Mm-hmm.
Red Owl Legal Collective wants to talk to anyone that has experienced abuse by the Morton County Sheriff's Department, whether you were arrested or not, whether you were a witness to someone else's abuse or not. They want to hear from you or any other law enforcement that has been involved along with Morton County Sheriff's Department during the water protection activities, arrests, incarcerations, witnesses. Please call the Red Owl Legal support line at 701-595-0737. That's 701-595-0737. And please share that with other people. And finally, lots of people ask, what can they do? What can they do for the people of Standing Rock? If you can't go, but you really want to help, let me tell you something. There's something simple you can do. And the truth is, I'm going to challenge the listeners out there to do it. It's simple, but most people won't do it. They say they want to do something, but even when the only thing they have to do is make a simple phone call, they won't. So I challenge the listeners out there that have their heartstrings pulling on them to make a call, make various calls. I'm going to give you some numbers to call folks. The White House, tell them that you want Dakota Access Pipeline stopped. Tell them that you want the abuses of Morton County sheriffs and their allies to stop. Call the White House at 202-456-1111 or 202-456-1414. Call Jack Dalrymple at 701-328-2200. Call the Morton County Sheriff's Department at 701-667-3330. The Army Corps of Engineers at 202-761-5903. Lee Hans, Executive Vice President of Energy Transfer Partners at 210-403-6455. Glenn Emery, Vice President of Energy Transfer Partners at 210-403-6762. Or Michael Cliff of the Water Lead Analyst Energy Transfer Partners at 713-989-2404. Thank you for listening to this important update about Standing Rock here on Mexican Crossing Lines. Minnie Wachoni, Water is Life.
Yeah. Vida flaca, es